forcing Russia to submit the European illusion. Or maybe I should have called it the European self-delusion, because that's where we are. And it is really hard to fathom and hard for me to even get my mind wrapped around that we still keep having to come back with shows like this. Because you keep thinking, okay, with the advances on the front line and the Russians moving closer and closer, with Pokrovsk all but gone, with Mirnograd now completely surrounded, Kupiansk continues to basically be also under Russian control, Zaporizhia is moving farther and farther to the west on the front lines down there. The Kharkiv area continues to move further to the south, where now Vovchansk is effectively also now fully under Russian control. All that would seem to come to the conclusion that, okay, now, especially with President Trump really trying to push the negotiated settlement, meetings happening as we speak in Miami, in Paris right now, it's time to just bring this to an end, to just get this thing off the table and stop the loss and the slaughter, one would think. Unfortunately, the Europeans are not in that camp. As a matter of fact, all those things I just mentioned are still, I don't know, they just pretend they don't exist. And you're going to see why. And I'm not talking about just one European. I'm talking about most of the European leading voices. Let's start, first of all, with Kaja Kallas, who is basically the foreign minister for the European Union, who was simultaneously, in this one very short clip, is going to be talking about a pivotal week for diplomacy, and then also saying that, oh, by the way, Russia didn't even want peace.
It is clear that Russia does not want peace, and therefore we need to make Ukraine as stronger as possible in order to them to be ready to stand up for themselves in this very, very difficult time. It could be a pivotal week for diplomacy. We heard yesterday that the talks in America were difficult but productive. We don't know the results yet, but I will talk to the defense minister of Ukraine and as well as foreign minister of Ukraine today.
What does that even mean? It could be a pivotal week for diplomacy. I mean, to make that statement automatically implies that there are things going on that could possibly be close to a negotiated settlement, that we could be ready for a breakthrough, i.e. that the Ukraine side would have to acknowledge and recognize that it cannot win the war, and so we're willing to make some negotiated settlement. And yet, just seconds before that, she tells you, and just without, of course, any evidence, that Russia does not want peace. Well, obviously, Russia does want peace. But equally, obviously, Russia does not want the terms of that peace that are acceptable or preferable to Europe and Ukraine. That's what we're at. And since those are just categorically opposite and not even close, not only are they not close, they're continuing to expand, which is hard to imagine, but they do keep continuing to go in opposite directions. Therefore, what logic could lead you to say that we could be at a pivotal diplomatic week this week? Because Zelensky right now, as we speak, is in Paris talking to Macron. And there was some meetings between Umarov, the chief negotiator for Ukraine, former defense minister in Miami, with Secretary of State Rubio. More on him in just a second. But you're going down a path to where there is no convergence of positions. And I'm talking about within the European and the United States position. For the moment, we'll even talk about the Russian side, although she mentions that there's no closing of the gap there. And there's no changing on the battlefield in a positive direction for the Ukraine side. So one has to wonder, upon what logic are you basing your position here that this could be a pivotal week for diplomacy? I can almost just imagine probably the only thing that makes any plausible sense is that they're talking about a pivotal week for diplomacy on the Western side, because definitely not on the Western / Russian side, which is obviously necessary to bring the war to a conclusion no matter what. But she doesn't seem to even be close on those matters, because she even says, well, it's a difficult negotiation that was going on down there in Miami, and I haven't heard from the Ukrainian defense minister, so she says. I have a hard time believing that's the case, but that just adds more curiosity and weirdness to the whole dynamic, because you want to talk about how there's possibilities and prospect of progress, At the same time, you're telling me all the inputs and all the actual pieces are not moving in a good direction. So it just really looks like a lot of self-delusion. And then, you know, talking about Russia doesn't want, or Ukraine is trying to get peace, but Russia doesn't want it. And then it's kind of like, you know, but whatever, it's because Russia doesn't want peace anyway. And here's what she said in a different setting. On the same day, she added this.
Ministers also discussed the European defense. Everyone agreed that Europe must continue to boost its own defenses. We do not have much time to act. Putin is unlikely to honor any agreement for long. And if we are not strong, it's going to happen sooner. Leaders have given a clear direction with the defense readiness roadmap. Capability coalitions are being set up now. Some have already met on air defense and drones, for example. Others will follow soon. Concrete projects are expected in the first half of next year.
So understand what's happening in front of your face right here. This is the diplomatic head of the European Union, okay? The diplomatic head. Not the Ministry of Defense or the Ministry of Offense, however you want to look at it, the Ministry of War, but the minister, diplomatic head. So you're talking here about a situation where the diplomatic head of the side trying to find a negotiated settlement to end the war between Russia and Ukraine categorically states, and this is echoing and mirroring what Mark Rutte said, the NATO Secretary General, just last week, that whatever kind of deal that we get that we don't even have yet, they won't meet it anyway. They won't follow it anyway. So we are preparing militarily to continue to ramp up our capabilities. And then she went into several of the categories that they're talking about here. Now, if you're the Russian side, upon what basis do you think any negotiated settlement at all is worth your effort? Where is there any plausibility for the other side of this to have a negotiated settlement with you when you are categorically stating, when you're not even close to a negotiated yet, that but whatevs, because whenever one does come, they're not going to keep it anyway. So we're going to expect that to be the case and get ready for more conflict. That's not only self-delusion, it's self-defeating. Because you are giving the other side all the incentive in the world not to come to any kind of an agreement, not to compromise on anything, because you're already telling them very clearly before the thing even gets close that we don't believe you'll meet it anyway. So we're preparing militarily to be able to confront you. Now, let's just add one more element to that, one more problem. Just in the British media, just hours before we came on air here, I saw it just about 45 minutes ago, is that you have, Valerie Zaluzhny here talking about, here's how to defeat Putin and build a better Ukraine. Peace provides a chance for political change and deepen reform. Yeah, listen to that, man. That is insane. Peace provides a chance for us to defeat Putin. So let's get Putin to agree to a negotiated settlement. That's one thing. Then you also have, that was actually a couple of days ago. Then you also have today, one of the senior NATO officials, and I think it was the one of the other British, yeah, there it is, that NATO is considering preemptive action against Russia's hybrid warfare tactics. NATO is considering preemptive action against Russia following a string of hybrid attacks on Europe, a senior official in the alliance's war. An Italian Admiral Giuseppe Cavo Dragone, who serves as chair of the NATO Military Committee, said the alliance may need to adopt a more, quote, aggressive approach to deter Moscow from continuing its campaign of drone incursions and cyber attacks in Europe. Now, listen, I don't have any direct knowledge about whether Russia has done these things that they're being accused of or not, this so-called hybrid war, the sabotage attacks that have been happening in a number of places in Europe, specifically in Poland on some rail networks that have happened recently. I don't know. It's possible. I might even say it's probable. But for the moment of, for right now, let's just assume that they're all accurate, that what the admiral said or the general there said is completely true. And Russia actually has done all of these things. Really? You're going to be surprised by that? And you're acting like it's in this vacuum that, like, well, we have to do something to reestablish deterrence. We need to be deterrent. So let's talk about ramping up military actions. Why do you suppose that the Russians are doing these things that you're accusing them of? Is it in just out of nowhere that those darn aggressive Russians, for no good reason, are doing all these things that have to do with moving weapons and ammunition from Europe into Ukraine for the purpose of killing Russian soldiers? See, this is part of the bizarre weirdness of the Western thinking right now. And listen, for my Western friends here, I'm sorry if it sounds really mean. And if it hurts anybody's feelings or insults anybody, I genuinely am sorry for that. But it is time for us to rip off the Band-Aids here, and more than accurately, rip off the blindfolds that we've been putting on. You cannot take these kinds of actions that we have for 4 long years, and actually go back to 2014 for that matter. Even during the Trump first administration, he ramped up the kinds of weapons and ammunition that was sent to Ukraine. So it's been going on for a long time, all of which directly results in Ukraine being a proxy force for the West to kill Russian soldiers and help them in their war. Now, why do you think that there will never be a counteraction to our action? That it's absurd. It's like, listen, it's kind of like a schoolyard situation. I want to be able to walk up and to this guy over here, I want to be able to punch him in the face, and I want to be able to punch him in the gut, and I want to hit him again in the face, and I want him to do nothing. And then if he fights back, I'm going to say, unbelievable. Did you see what he did? We have to do more. I mean, it's absurd to even say, and it is childlike, but the problem is it's real. And this has direct negative pressure on trying to get this war over without expanding. Now, I don't know what the general has in mind here, but my guess is that they're thinking about something that's also in the so-called hybrid zone, which would be indirect, but it could also be sabotage inside of Russia. It may be a tit-for-tat kind of situation that we may be contemplating. And believe me, Russia is going to be paying attention for this kind of thing. And this has every opportunity to risk expansion of the war, not in a hybrid way, not in a gray zone sort of situation, but an actual conflict. We just don't know where the line actually is. I don't even know that Russia knows where the line is. I know that they're tired of it. And these evidence of these strikes imply that they're actually moving more aggressively. Because it may be accurate. It's hard to imagine that these, you know, some of the things just happened to occur by themselves, or it was just an accident. Don't much believe in coincidences. So it could well be accurate, but it is in direct result in that case to the years that we've been helping Ukraine kill Russians. And you cannot lock Russia. If you want to do this, and you think that that's in your national interest, that's a choice that can be made. Let's be clear on that. But you have to also be clear that there will be a consequence, or there likely will be. Now, there hadn't been a whole lot up to this point, and maybe we just thought, well, there hadn't been, so there never will be. And now that there may appear to be some reactions, we're like, how dare they? I can't believe it. That's not the rules. That's not how the game is set up. That's not how the Western rules-based order that we established after the defeat of the Nazis 80 years ago, that's not how the game works. Well, it's not a game, and the rules are changing because Russia's apparently been fed up with it, and they have had a lot of restraint at this point, but now it looks like some of that restraint's coming off. All the more reason to get this thing off the table quickly. But this delusion just spreads across time zones and across the West. There was another article here, Gary, if you can put that other one up there, that they're talking about. There's a shift in some of the movements into Russia. And the question is going to be, can Russia or will Russia actually abide by some of these? No, not that one. Not that one. That's the one here. Ukraine peace talks shift to Moscow. The big unknown is whether Putin will play ball. What do you mean will play ball? See, this is from CNBC. There's this understanding or this expectation. This is today's news. This is in the United States. Is that wondering if Putin will play ball? Well, of course, the impression, the interpretation of play ball in this context is that will Russia submit to what we want? Will these, whether it's the 28-point or the 19-point peace plans that are floating around out there, will Russia give in to them? And more on that in a second. But first of all, let's see, where is the United States on this? How are we playing with a lot of this delusion going on? Now, Kaya Kallas had mentioned that there was talks going on in the United States between the U.S. and Ukraine. Here is Rubio after one of those talks.
There's more work to be done. This is delicate. It's complicated. There are a lot of moving parts. And obviously, there's another party involved here that will have to be a part of the equation. And that'll continue later this week when Mr. Witkoff travels to Moscow. Although we've also been in touch in varying degrees with the Russian side. But we have a pretty good understanding of their views as well. So much work remains.
Well, okay, much work remains. We know pretty much their views, which haven't changed. I mean, there's no evidence that they have on the Ukraine side has changed at all. Rubio literally said nothing there. There's no reports of anything other than it's difficult. Well, I think we assume that. That's the entry-level position. So what's the exit position here? And then the question is, why is Witkoff going to Moscow? He's going to Moscow. The Russians have also acknowledged this. He's going to be there tomorrow. What are you going to talk about if you don't even have agreement with Ukraine now and they haven't agreed to anything to change any positions that they didn't have prior to that meeting? What are you going to do? What is Witkoff going to talk about? Does someone imagine, like that CNBC article, that yes, the Putin may, quote, play ball because of what Witkoff's going to go? So is Witkoff going to go there tomorrow and say, okay, we're where we were before, and will you change your mind this time? I mean, I've shown you several times two sound bites, one recently and one from June 2024 many times. Won't replay them here, but if you've been watching our show for any time, you know probably what I'm already going to say, is that Putin in uniform just about 2 weeks ago, I suppose, said, we will accomplish all the goals, all the objectives of the special military operation, all of them, by negotiations, or we will take them on the battlefield. So their position is unambiguous and unchanged. Upon what possible logic can you imagine, especially if we pull out the map again and look and see what's happening just over the weekend? There's continuing to be advancements and escalation on numerous fronts all across this 1,000 kilometer front. What has changed that would make you think that, well, maybe Putin didn't mean that then? Even though when we show you the June 14th, 2024 statement where he made all those declarations, and they have multiple times since that time, even within the last couple of months, reiterated that those terms are unchanged. Demilitarization, denazification, all four administrative borders of the four regions that they acknowledge, no NATO, neutrality, and rights for the Russian speakers elsewhere in Ukraine. What has changed? What is unclear about this? And what is Witkoff going to do tomorrow when he's going to go and tell Russia that nothing changed? That even though Rubio talked to Umerov and the other Ukrainian delegations, they haven't changed their position on anything. Did you? I mean, why would Russia do that? I mean, I suppose Russia is just going to say, well, we'll keep talking. I mean, they've remained at the table through all this, but if anyone has paid any attention to Russia at all throughout this entire war, it's pointless to even think, and it's irrational to think that they're going to change their position from a position of strength and give into the position on the side that's from weakness. But that's where we stay. We are still there. Rubio made one other comment too.
We had another very productive session building off Geneva, building off the events of this week. As I told you earlier this morning, our goal here is to end the war, but it's more than just to end the war. We don't just want to end the war. We also want to help Ukraine be safe forever, so never again will they face another invasion. And equally importantly, we want them to enter an age of true prosperity. We want the Ukrainian people to emerge from this war, not just to rebuild their country, but to build it back in a way that will be stronger and more prosperous than it's ever been. It's not just about the terms that ends fighting. It's about also the terms that set up Ukraine for long-term prosperity.
Okay, so I titled this episode Forcing Russia to Submit, the European Illusion, but I suppose I probably should have changed it to the Western Illusion, because Rubio is American, he's not European, but that is just fantasy what he's talking about there. I want to have a situation to where Ukraine is safe. They're economically prosperous. Do you realize, Mr. Secretary, that because of the cumulative actions of the West, of Europe, of Ukraine, the Biden administration, and now the nearly a year in the Trump administration, that we have created the conditions and have insisted upon the conditions being realized on the ground that effectively has destroyed the Ukrainian state? We, by our policies, ensure that Russia continues to move forward militarily. We didn't stop after they lost Mariupol in 2022. We didn't stop after they lost Severodonetsk and Lysychansk. We didn't stop after they lost Bakhmut. We didn't stop after the Ukrainians utterly failed horrifically in an entire year preparation for an offensive in 2023. We didn't stop during any of the time, and we haven't stopped in any of the times when the Russians have continued to move. And as we talked about earlier, we haven't seen the final tallies yet, but the amount of territory that the Russians gained last month could be an all-time record. Who knows what it's going to be this month? And you're talking about we want them to have a nice, peaceful negotiation, and we want the terms on terms of something they can live with. Some of what we're pitching is that we wanted 800,000 member army to emerge from this. I don't know how anybody thinks that Ukraine is going to pay for that when before the war they had about 250,000, and that's what they sustained. And now then you want to have something that's nearly four times larger than that? And who's going to pay for that? And with what economy? It's going to be a decade at the earliest from the time the war ends before Ukraine will have any chance to have a successful economy. And that's with massive external influence or financial inputs. But you're still talking about we want them to be safe. We don't want to give up anything. We just want Russia to just stop what they're doing. I mean, that's such a fantasy. There's no basis upon that. Because you cannot end a war unless you have an agreement on both sides. And if you can't have an agreement on both sides, then the side that has the dominant position of power and the ability to wage and successfully accomplish war will dictate the terms. We've been on that side most of the time here in the last century or so. But now it's not that time anymore. Those aren't the conditions that exist here. See, we have... really, from World War I forward, we just have this mentality that we get to call the shots. We get to say the terms of everything that happened, and especially since 1991, 1992 with the fall of the Soviet Union, we just think we get to call all the shots. All this last quarter century with the advancements of NATO and all the complaints from the Russian side, we blew them off and just didn't pay any attention because we didn't have to. We had the position that we thought we had the dominant position and we could continue to do things forever and there never would be a consequence. And now there is one. And as long as we keep that same mentality unchanged, the consequences will probably pick up speed and get worse. That's the likelihood. That's the way human history has gone for thousands of years. Forget about the technology. The humans are the same all the way through. And so as long as you continue to cling to these things of just unreality, you are literally building up consequences for yourself and almost guaranteeing that whatever the failure is going to be, it's going to continue to worsen. So the conditions that we have right now are horrible. They're awful. They're also primarily of our own making because we could have ended this in 2021, December 2021. We could have actually, we could just go back to Minsk in 2015, but 2021, 2022, 2023, 2024, and now. And every time we reject it, every time we refuse and just puff up our chest and say, no, Russia's going to change. Russia just says, nope, we're not going to. The only thing we're going to change is how much territory we have. And they'll keep moving to the West. And they'll keep destroying Ukrainians' human capital and their men in the process. You can rebuild the cities. You can't rebuild lost lives. That seems to be where we are. President Trump, though, did say one thing on Air Force One yesterday, and he seemed to at least address one of the difficulties.
I think Ukraine would like to see it end, and I think Ukraine, I know Ukraine would like to see it end.
Yeah, we got this little corruption thing going on. It's not helpful. Because now that we have the exposure of a real problem that has been one of the worst kept secrets, you know, that anybody's had in the West, that there's this serious corruption at the highest levels in Ukraine. We know that it's now Zelensky's right-hand man and his left-hand man have both been exposed. One has resigned, one has fled the country. And somehow we keep letting Zelensky just trot around and just pretend like nothing has happened. And the worst we've seen right there is where Trump just said, board Air Force One yesterday, well, there's a little problem. A little problem? I mean, let's take a look at this, folks. This, again, just... this exposes the rot in the Western way of thinking. What used to pass for morality in the West, it was always a bit of a cringe. It was always a bit of an eye roll. But many people in the West actually meant it in that we wanted to stand for freedom and democracy and human rights and the value of every human being. That used to be, at least on paper, and that many actually believed it. And certainly it was. And I saw it play out many times. And I know the United States, for all of our sins, there were periods of times where we did the right thing and we did something good for other people that benefited other people. Those days are in the history books now. And now then, while we claim those same terms, we still use the same words. Kaya Kallas does all the time. Ursula von der Leyen does on almost a daily basis. Yet in practicality, they don't exist. We don't want democracy. There is nothing approximating democracy in Ukraine right now. Let's just call it what it is. Here's another one of those blindfolds / band-aids we're going to rip off. There is no democracy in Ukraine right now. In wartime, the United States, in a civil war, held a presidential election. Abraham Lincoln was elected. The Russians, in this war, during wartime, held an election. President Putin went up for election. You can argue it wasn't a fair election, whatever you want to do to make yourself feel better, but they did hold it. Ukraine did not. They specifically chose not to have this presidential election. And so even though he came to the end of his legal term, we just said, no worries, just sign this thing for, what do you call it? The war, the, I just went blank on it. But just sign this document that says, yeah, don't worry, we won't have to, martial law, sorry. Just sign the martial law, then you don't have to worry about an election until you feel like it. So no problem, just keep going forever. Even though we did, even though the Russians did, hold an election during wartime, you don't have to. So, but we'll still call you a democracy, no problem. Oh, and if you want to get rid of all the political parties you don't like, that's cool. If you want to get rid of all the religious institutions and organizations you don't like, that's fine too. If you want to shutter all the media outlets that don't say things that you want, that's cool. If you want to put people in jail that you don't like, yeah, that's fine too. And if you want to have corruption that is incredibly and egregious and out in the open, yeah, that's fine too. We'll still call you a democracy. This is what you want to die for? This is the regime that you want to risk going to war against a nuclear-armed Russia to defend? Listen to me. Listen carefully here. Don't miss this, folks. This is about the elites, the Western elites, and the economic benefit that they derive. So they're okay with the corruption in Ukraine because they're aware of it. They've been helping to fund it, and now that even though it got exposed and out, they're still doing nothing about it. And who cares if it's Zelensky's right and left-hand man? That's meaningless. The only one that matters is Zelensky. And yet there he is in Paris. And again, he's being feted like a king. And he's going to go to, I believe it's Ireland tomorrow. So he's jet-setting all over the place and making all these speeches. We didn't show any today because it doesn't matter what he said. It's the same thing he said a bunch of other times before. And this is like an ugly mirror to ourselves. Because we're aware of this and we want to point all these fingers at Moscow, all these bad things that the Russians do, et cetera, absolving ourselves of these just horrible sins in our own hands covered with blood, our faces covered with mud, and the embarrassing humiliation of the contradictions in what we claim and what we do. And we just always want to blame Russia. And then we just want Russia to submit to us again, even though it's not 1991 anymore. We still really want it to be 1991. And we're cool with however many Ukrainian men have to die to cover the fiction. We're fine with that. That's where the ultimate charges are for this. That's who's actually paying the price for this, is the Ukrainian men and women and all of their family members and their children who are utterly powerless to bring this war to an end. And I've been communicating with one here in just the last 12 or so hours, and it is just bitter and cruel for those people because they want the war to end. Many of them don't want to lose, but it doesn't matter anymore. They want the killing and the destruction, the pointless destruction of their country to stop. They want to hold their own leaders to account. They want good leaders who will actually do a good job, a rational job that can end the killing and start the rebuilding process. But so far, with the guy at the top now and all of the Western leaders giving him a pass for everything, that killing has not stopped and it's not going to anytime soon. And that is the cruel irony of this, is that we're exposing our own duplicity and just turning a blind eye to the other part of this in the Ukraine side and all the corruption, and just keep this bony finger pointed at Russia. And Russia's no innocent party here. They've done plenty of things that are awful and deserve a finger, I suppose, pointed at it, but it doesn't make any difference. This is a matter of what you can do and what you can't do. Morality is vital, and it's critical. It's important to have if you want to have a good society that has a chance for people to genuinely live in freedom and to have prosperity and to have democracy. All those things are worthwhile and important. We should continue to go down those paths, and we should actually apply them to ourselves. Until we apply them to ourselves, we can never point a bony finger at anyone, whatever their actual sins may be. That's the problem. And as long as we keep going down this path here, Russia is going to feel every justification in the world for everything it's doing, and we may end up finding ourselves sucked into a war of our own making, which all too easily could go nuclear. But even if it just stayed conventional, you could be talking about millions of people could be dying for the elite. There is no reason why
one thing I've been trying to understand.
There's no reason why we should ever get into any of these kinds of wars. And it's time to stop this madness before it gets too far. That's our show for today, folks. We got another one coming up. We're going to go into a little bit more detail at 2:30 p.m. today, with where NATO threatens Russia with a preemptive action, because there's a lot of things that go along with that. Tune in for that this afternoon. We will give you more details then, and we really appreciate you guys. See you this afternoon on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.